This is episode number 57 with Jordan Bach. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Now get ready, you guys, for a powerful episode today with the incredibly inspiring Jordan Bach. Now, Jordan is a life coach, motivational speaker, blogger, and certified yoga and meditation teacher, and he's been recognized as one of the most influential teachers on the contemporary spiritual scene. And Jordan's down-to-earth messages reach a whole new generation of people seeking wisdom and inner peace. And you guys are going to get a good dose of that today. Now, Jordan brings hope and healing to hundreds of thousands of people around the world through his popular blog and social media posts, which I've followed for a while now, and I encourage you all to do the same. And Jordan has co-hosted the television series Secret Guide to Fabulous, produced by Kelly Ripa, where he was the resident lifestyle and relationship expert. And The Advocate magazine ranked Jordan as one of the 40 most accomplished leaders under 40, calling him one of the few you should listen to among our modern-day cacophony of voices. And Jordan has also been openly gay since the age of 12, and through his popular YouTube videos, he teaches LGBTQ plus people around the world how to practice self-love, which y'all know I am all about self-love as the foundational teaching for healing yourself and feeling empowered and alive. So today, Jordan and I talk about a bunch of different things, but one of the key things we really drop in about today are about cultivating faith, trust, and your spirituality to live a deeply fulfilling life. Now, this is huge, you guys. If you truly want to feel happy and at peace at all times, you really want to tap into your spirituality, and we drop all in about that today. And also, if you're hitting a rough patch in life right now and you need some guidance, Jordan drops some serious nuggets of wisdom on how to release the struggle and to receive answers from the divine. And we also discuss everything from how to stop holding yourself back to making sure you're tapped into the energy of solutions and how Jordan powerfully communicates with those that he disagrees with. Now, this will help you own your voice and to powerfully speak your truth. Now, other things that we chat about today are how to develop your intuition as your superpower, the way to stop giving excuses and holding yourself back, how to cultivate faith and a deep trust to know that the universe has your back, the important factor to build self-esteem, how to ask God or the universe for guidance, how to release self-doubt and self-judgment, what creates fear and how to let it go. And you'll also learn one of Jordan's affirmations that he uses to keep him feeling at peace when change is happening. And you can use this to keep yourself grounded when things are changing around you. And of course, we're going to cover so much more. This is a beautiful episode infused with so much love and spiritual principles. You are definitely going to want to share this episode out with your friends and your family. So you can start by sharing by taking a screenshot of this podcast that you're listening to, post it on Instagram, on your stories, or in your feed, and tag me at I am Stephanie Kwong to spread the love and so I can find you to shout you back. Okay, guys, here we go with Jordan.
Welcome, Jordan Bach, to the Rise Higher podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy you are here.
Let's do this.
going down.
It's going down. No, I'm so grateful that you are on this show. As I shared with you before we started rolling, you're somebody who I've really just admired you, loved your content, your inspiration, but truly the biggest key is always feeling how you lead from your heart. And I think that is truly the mark of a powerful leader.
It's interesting you can sense that through social media.
Yeah. That's how strong it is, Jordan.
Wow. Okay. All right. I'll take it.
Something that actually I really love that I've heard you share before, but I wanted you to kind of go a little bit deeper, is how you even got on your spiritual path. Because I know that you share that your parents were atheists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now you're a spiritual teacher. And I would love for you kind of to share a little bit about how that transitioned for you.
I was raised in a non-religious, non-spiritual home. But I always felt since I was a little boy that there was some presence, some hovering, compassionate presence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have words for it. And a vocabulary wasn't given to me by a religion or even a form of spirituality. It was just this sense or this inner knowing. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a little boy and waking up in the crib on a bright, sunny day in the summer. And I looked around and no one, I could sense no one was in the house except my grandmother. It makes me emotional talking about it now, even. I could sense that my grandmother was in the house, but no one else was there. So suddenly I had this panic set in as a, you know, 3 or 4 year old. And then suddenly I felt that I couldn't see it and there were no words, but I felt and heard a presence hover over me and say, "It's okay. It's okay. Nan is in the basement doing laundry." And so I was immediately calmed down and I climbed out of the crib and went to the basement and found my grandmother folding laundry out of the dryer. And so there was no religion, no word. I didn't have a word for it. And in fact, my father at the dinner table would say, "Anyone who believes in some, you know, bearded man in the sky is stupid, intellectually feeble, and just seeking comfort against the harsh realities of life." My father's a really smart man, so I took him at his word. But I couldn't deny that there was this feeling that, oh, maybe there is something that is guiding me and protecting me and loving me at all times, even and especially when I'm most alone or afraid.
Yeah.
And so that sort of developed naturally. And in second grade, brought in a self-help book.
In second grade?
Yeah.
What book was it?
Brought in a self-help book for reading time. And my teacher grabbed it out of my hands and said, "This is not a book for you. This isn't a real book for you because you're too young." And I was like, "What?" So no, I've been reading self-help since, maybe about second grade. And then I never thought for a second I would get into actually doing, you know, spirituality as my job.
Yeah.
But I asked for signs after college, you know, what should I do? What should I do? And signs clearly presented themselves, like books showing up on my bookshelf that I didn't put there and that no friend left at my apartment, but they were on my bookshelf. And authors like Marianne Williamson popped up and showed me, "This is you."
Mm.
So I think we can all, if we ask for signs, and that's what I did, there's actually a blog on my website called Letter to God. And if you write a letter to God or to the universe, however you know, call your higher power, and you ask for signs, what that does is create a psychological opening. And that's really what a prayer is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a creation of a psychological opening through which you can perceive what's already there. So that's what I did in my letter to God. And I read it for people on my blog, on camera, what that what that letter was. And I asked for signs. What am I to do with my life? What am I to do? I know that I must have some gifts. How can I share them? And then I made a promise that we'll use them to spread your love. And then the signs started popping up. Wow. So anyone who's listening can look at that blog and create their own letter to God, humbly, surrenderedly, asking for guidance, and then looking around to see what that guidance is, because it's all around us all the time. It's just we're not paying attention.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I that has been a big thing for me, and especially going even deeper now where it is connecting in with God. It's God for me. I know for other people who are listening, it might be universe, source, the quantum field, whatever it might be, higher power. But for me, it's God. And I wasn't always tapping in, and I was somebody who thought, oh, I've got this. I'm doing life on my own. I've got to figure it out. And it's exhausting.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't until...
It's a setup for burnout.
And that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not until... And that's why I actually... I'm going to go check out your... how you wrote your letter to God, and I'm excited to hear you read it on your blog. But it's so important as I've been diving in more and asking for guidance and praying for the resources, it does just show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do we make it so fucking hard? Excuse me.
No, it's fine.
Why do we make it so hard? And I've discovered, at least in my own life, that there is this unconscious or subconscious belief that life has to be hard.
Mm.
So we're almost like wiring ourselves for struggle.
Yep.
So Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst, said that enlightenment is not about images of light. It's about making the unconscious conscious.
Mm.
And that's when I first read that was a blow to my New Age mentality, which was, wait, I thought it was about imagining light and just being the light and so forth.
And floating and levitating.
Yeah, and floating and levitating and being around all my angels and guides, which, by the way, do exist.
They do.
But it made me get real about something, which is your unconscious drives your life.
Yeah.
And an unconscious belief, which is very prevalent, is life has to be struggle. I have to struggle in order to get by. And the fact of the matter is, pain will come to us in life without our doing. Mm-hmm. If pain comes to you, it doesn't mean that necessarily you've manifested it. Pain is one of the ways we learn.
Yep.
But going about everyday life and just there's this, and maybe some of your listeners right now can sense, oh, maybe I do kind of have that belief that like everything needs to be a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And when you recognize that, and honestly, one of the coolest things is that just by recognizing something, in other words, doing what Jung said was making the unconscious conscious, you can see it for what it is, which is a lie, and it falls away of its own weight. We think we need to do a lot more healing than we actually do.
Mm.
We need to recognize those dark thoughts and say, fuck off. Not today, Satan. Literally, not today, Satan.
Yeah.
The Jews call it Satan, or it's the loveless mind. So you can say to Satan, not today.
Not today. Mm-mm, not going to fly with me. Go do that somewhere else. Not right here.
Yeah, go do it. Not today.
Yeah.
I love myself too much. I have so much forgiveness for myself. I'm not going to put up with it.
Yeah. You know, something that I've seen people really struggle with, and this happens with my clients and I'm sure with yours as well, is the ability to forgive self. Right. So you said it's like, well, just I have so much self-forgiveness. It's not going to happen now. When I've talked to people about self-forgiveness, some of my clients, it's, I can feel a wall go up, or they'll even flat out say, I can't do that.
I can't. Yeah.
Or that's hard. So for people who struggle with forgiving themselves, how would you guide them to actually be open to doing that? And what would be the benefit for them if they did forgive themselves?
Forgive someone else first. Mm. And, you know, so much of the way that this reality is set up in life. You want to hear a New Age myth?
Yes.
This is a total myth, and it really screws people over. And you'll see it on Instagram constantly. And that is, I don't need anyone else to complete me. It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dangerous lie. Because intimacy is the soul's longing. We need other people to mirror the best of us and the worst of us back to ourselves so that we can learn and so that we can grow. So when you forgive someone else, what you're really doing is forgiving yourself. And an example of that is finding something that's unforgivable that someone has done to you and forgiving them for it. And in that instant, it's what A Course in Miracles would call a holy instant. You transform everything. You transform your life. And you're willing to look past the physical reality of the situation, how they hit you, what they said to you. You're willing to look past that to see the truth, which is that each of us here is a soul. And we have love in our soul's deepest longing is for intimacy. And when people feel that intimacy being pulled away from them, they lash out.
Mm.
So if you can forgive, and I'm not saying, here's what I'm not saying, to pour your physical love and affection on someone who's abusing you. I'm not saying that. I'm saying in your heart and in your mind, you recognize what the truth of the situation is, which is that this is a person whose behavior is a call for love. All behavior is either an expression of love or a call for love. So call a spade a spade. I mean, I just did so this morning with someone who lashed out over email.
How do you do that then when you call that spade a spade? Do you make it known for them or do you just can?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not cool. Not cool. And not on my watch. Not on my watch will you disrespect another human being, even if that other human being is me. Mm. Not on my watch. And I will call a spade a spade. And the difference is between, you know, and then someone, this is in an email chain this morning, and then someone else replied a hateful, insulting reply. And I said, oh, you just ruined the good work I did. Because what I did was just call a spade a spade. And it wasn't, and here's another New Age myth, that by sounding nice or by putting exclamation points saying, you know, thank you, exclamation point, that somehow that makes the email nice. No, you're being inauthentic and people will read it as inauthentic. So a huge lesson for me in life and something that I've loved learning is how to communicate clearly and effectively what you really feel about a situation. And so anyone who's listening, who's experiencing some abuse or some behavior that they feel is unfair, it's okay. It's spiritual. It's deeply spiritual to call a spade a spade. And if and it's not about insulting someone or talking about your, you know, hurt feelings and using them as fact. It's about being honest and not letting people get by being disrespectful without calling them out on it. And I think that's of the utmost importance. Today I worry in the New Age community that people are focusing so much on the way it looks and sounds to be spiritual rather than what it actually means when the rubber hits the road.
Yeah.
To use a masculine metaphor there.
And I think it's also, and I would love for you to expand on this, like how do you actually call it out without letting your emotions get in the way and also kind of be at this, be doing exactly what that other person do, which is lashing out, because I can see where there is a lot of calling each other out, but in a way that has an undertone of hurt, right?
Yeah.
What would be a way to be able to communicate effectively, yet not be doing what the person you're calling out did?
Yeah. The way I think of it is, I want to be a good father to myself. And what fathers do effectively is what they can do if you're blessed with a good father is discipline and order and structure. And part of that is calling you out when you are doing something that is wrong. And at least this is the archetype that I'm thinking of. So please, if someone's offended by my gender stereotyping, forgive me. But so when I'm writing, you know, an email response like this morning, I think to myself, like, what would my ideal father say to me? What would my ideal father say to this person? In a way that's respectful and dignified and factual, and not to use another gender term. I'm sorry, I'm going to do it. Bitchy.
Yeah.
Because that's nonsense, and we're seeing so much of this arguing nowadays on social media, due to the rise of a for some people deeply popular president. The political arguing and people having bitchy clapbacks and it's everywhere. And it seems that we've lost touch with reasonable argument. That I can present facts, you present facts, and let's not get tied up in our emotions about it.
Yeah.
And let's be reasonable people. Yeah.
Totally. And I see people, instead of speaking the facts or what they're seeing, they're actually attacking the person, which is when it becomes harmful.
Yeah. And that's just a bad argument.
Yeah.
It's a bad argument to attack the person, or to lodge character attacks. How about you attack what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's fine. It's fair game.
Yeah.
Come at me with more facts. Let's reason through this together. I think through the deep reason of the masculine mind, so to speak, and this is an archetype, and the compassion of the heart of the feminine mind, that is saving the world. And I use this archetype powerfully, and I resonate with it deeply as a queer person. I believe that my masculine spirit and my feminine spirit have a special intertwining. And it's lovely to see how the masculine plays out in my life and also how the feminine plays out. And the more I do that, it's healing. You know, in the Gospel of Thomas, which is a Gnostic text, Jesus says, when male and female become one, then you shall enter the kingdom of heaven. And so I think the ways that we can see how the masculine needs to work in our lives and how the feminine needs to work in our lives, it brings about natural healing.
Absolutely. And I think it's also when it's like the healthy masculine and feminine, because I believe there's a healthy and unhealthy to everything. And when people talk about, you know, oh, let's get rid of the masculine, it's not so much that there's anything bad with it. It's the toxic masculinity, just like there's toxic femininity, that I think is the where we don't operate from. But like you said, intertwining the masculine and the feminine together, because both are necessary. It's like, for me, I'm Chinese, and so I always think of it also like the yin and the yang. You can't have one without the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're
I think that's an important point to make, actually, that you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
Or that somehow there would be an unraveling if one weren't here. So as a queer person, I find it problematic, actually, that there's this discourse that's so pervasive and it's a barrage, this idea of toxic masculinity. Mm. I think that if there were more appreciation of, as you said, the healthy aspects of masculinity, mm-hmm. Those aspects which might be regarded as toxic would fall away of their own weight. It's a really dangerous thing to do, especially to a male brain, to say, you're bad, sit down and shut up. It's not going to work. It just won't work. No. It's untenable. It's a bad idea. It's a flawed prospect. And so, you know, what I will do for my son is encourage the higher angels of his nature. Mm. And I think in a society at large, we can do that through our media and through our representation of what it means to be a modern man.
Absolutely. I think that's almost a beautiful lesson to be with people in life, is to encourage the beautiful qualities, the healthier qualities, right? Expressions of love out of them and who they be in that embodiment, versus pointing out what they did bad and wrong and shaming and judging them for, because that's where most people have gone into, you know, their own personal shaming and judging of self.
Yeah. So, one of the most effective things, this is so good. I wish I had learned this a lot sooner than I did. So maybe someone listening will be moved by this. I think it was Nietzsche, the philosopher, who said, you can, now I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact words, but basically you can lead someone into being who they ought to. If you treat someone as if they are who they ought to be, they can become that person. Mm-hmm. So if you treat someone who's being stupid like they're stupid, it keeps them stupid. If you treat someone who's being stupid like they're smart, they'll wisen up.
Mm. Yeah.
And so goes for, you know, being loving, being whatever. Yeah. If you treat people as they ought to be, they can become who they ought to be.
Yeah.
And that was life-changing for me, because I realized there were many situations in my life where I was treating people like someone's rude to you, right?
Yep.
Someone's mean to you, and you talk back to them as if they're mean, which mm-hmm. they are being mean. But if you switch that and you say, let me speak to their higher angels, let me speak to the compassion in them, let me speak to the love in them, it totally changes the conversation.
Completely.
Oh. And many times, and I'm saying this not because I'm trying to preach, although turns out it's what I kind of do a lot.
But preach, Jordan, preach.
Preach, preach. But turns out in practical real-world situations, that has changed the game for me. There have been many moments where I remember a moment in a restaurant where someone was, you know, a table full of finance frat bros were talking and saying homophobic things. And I went up to them and I could have done one of two things. One, yell at them and be aggressive and shame them. Or I could have spoken to the love in them. And I did the latter. And I said, you guys, I walked up to the table. And who wants to walk up to a table full of drunk finance bros? Oh my gosh. But I did.
You did. Spreading that love. I got to.
I did a blog about it too. So I did a blog about that. So you can look it up on thebachbook.com. But I went up to the table and I really was like, you guys, if a gay person hearing you, like they would be crushed. And there are people who, you know, commit suicide because they just overhear stuff like this at dinner. Do you get what I'm saying? And every single guy at the table either looked down because they were embarrassed and they knew that they were wrong, or said, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And after that, you know, I went to sit back down at my table and a few of the guys came up and said, you know, we just want to say thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
And we're really sorry. And we see how that was wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a teaching moment.
Absolutely.
When you can speak to people's higher angels.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's bringing the light to the shadow that they didn't even see. Because I think sometimes people, they think that they're joking or they don't realize the impact that it has. So there are some, I think, who are deliberately, intentionally hurtful based off of the own hurt that they feel inside, right? They're just lashing. And then
yeah.
There's some who it's this, I would just call it ignorance, but they need to stop being ignorant. And I love that you had the courage to walk up and share that. And that was, like you said, a teachable moment for them.
Yeah, just say it's not cool.
Yeah.
And that's the idea. It's not that, you know, that's illegal, because you can say the great thing about at least the United States of America is you can say whatever you want as mm-hmm. long as it's not a direct, physical threat. So if they truly felt that, for example, horrible things about gay people, well, I'm here too. And my hateful stuff doesn't last in the scheme of eternity. Only love does.
Mm-hmm.
So I know my power. They have the power to do that. But as you said, they were just kind of goofing around. And I walked up to say, that's not cool.
Yeah.
And they were free to disagree with me and say, fuck off. We don't care what you have to say. But because I spoke to them with reason and with empathy and respect,
mm-hmm.
I said, I basically was telling them, you guys have power and you're wielding it wrongly.
Yeah.
And when you tell someone, whoa, you have power, and you can even do this in a personal relationship, say to someone, you know, those words, they hurt me. That's how much power you have. And that will get someone, even the most strident and unreasonable person, to reassess and go, wow, this person's not attacking me. They're actually saying, you have power, please use it wisely.
Mm.
And that changes the game.
That's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Jordan. I think that that's such an incredible way on communicating effectively so people can hear you and not get defensive and actually see another perspective, and for them to realize that truly they do have power and they can use it to harm or to help.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. And, you know, kind of piggybacking on that, speaking to people's who they really are, to their light, it's like I've had moments where people have been, you know, made comments, and old Stephanie has felt the hurt and wanted to lash back. And kind of the more conscious self within me, the one that leads from my heart, just takes a moment and I'll actually go, hey, are you okay? Like, what's really going on? And that just softens people sometimes, because they just, it's like almost they need to be heard, even in the moments when they're not being their best selves. And that really, and I know that you abide by this, it's just the salve is love. You know, how can you show up being even more loving, even in the face of cruelty? And that,
yeah,
to me is like the salve to heal all. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true in personal relationships for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to social media, it's a little bit different.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a different beast.
It's a different beast. And that beast is tamed by the mantra, forgive and delete.
Yeah. And block.
So when people, yeah, and block relentlessly.
Yes.
I tell people, block relentlessly.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, you have these trolls hiding behind, you know, you click on their page and it's 000. They're just troll accounts. So they have no followers, and they're just there to torment other people because they feel tormented inside. Don't waste your time, smoothing on the salve of love with these people.
No.
Forgive.
Yes.
Delete and block.
Yeah.
Online. Period.
Yep. So I agree. Absolutely. I think it's contextual, right? Like, what are you dealing with? And then how do you show up in that? And I think the blocking, deleting, forgiving is actually the act of self-love, right? I'm going to protect my energetic field and know that I don't deserve this or even want to entertain or be in this energy. So
not
bye.
On my watch.
Yeah. See ya. within the internal self, right? So there's can be harmful things we do to ourselves, whether that comes from self-judgment, self-doubt, self-beat up. How do you support people through that to turn that voice down and increase the voice of love and faith?
Increase the voice of love and faith.
When people are in that like self-doubt or self-beat up or self-judgment, what would you share?
Oh, laugh. If you can get someone to laugh, you know, I think of laughter as life's effervescence. And so I love, you know, my best friend of we've been friends since we were, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. All we do together is laugh.
That's awesome.
And we, you know, we were on the phone yesterday for an hour, just creating silly circumstances, imaginary circumstances and laughing about them. If you can laugh when you're in the thick of it, then that's going to give you some elevation and some effervescence. It's funny, you know, I started doing what I do basically as advice giving, in part because my sister once was venting to me about something. And I said, okay, Sasha, this is what you need to do. And she stopped me and said, I didn't ask for your advice. And I was like really bruised by that emotionally. I was like, oh my God, that was, oh my God. And then I tuned into it and was like, yeah, she didn't ask for your advice. What about you go find people who actually want your advice? And that's how I started doing what I do.
I love it.
So, yeah. So what I learned though with advice is that so often it's not so much the words you say or even the ideas that you transmit to someone, it's the energy of the solution. And so you can be with someone and you don't have to know the answer or the solution, but you can embody and transmit the energy of the solution.
Oof. Yes, Jordan. Yes.
You can, you know, and so that is also speaking about social media and politics and where we are today. That is something each of us who's listening can do. Is ask yourself, am I embodying the energy of the problem or the energy of the solution? And this is what we see on social media, you know, on my Instagram feed, people who I love, who are smart, savvy people, are embodying the energy of the problem that they seek to solve rather than embodying the energy of the solution. Again, you don't have to know exactly what the solution is, but you do know, you are already tapped into the energy of the solution. Does that make sense, kind of?
Yeah, so good. And can you give an go a little deeper and give an example?
Yeah. With the current political landscape, there's a lot of anger and fear, understandably so, right? But you have to ask yourself, am I embodying the energy of the solution? Or am I actually, by calling this out and the way that you're calling it out, are you embodying the energy of the problem? The Russian collusion, if there was to be Russian collusion in American politics.
If there was to be.
I'm trying to be diplomatic.
I know.
I'm a good diplomat.
You sure are.
They were relying on division. They were relying on division. They were creating Facebook groups to divide the American public. So you have to then ask yourself, whoa, well, that was the problem. Division, separation, arguing, anger, fear-mongering. So then what's the solution? Well, the solution would be listening, understanding, storytelling. It would be each of us reaching across and saying to a homophobe or a racist or an Islamophobe, Why do you think that?
Mm.
How did you come to believe that? I really want to know. And that's honestly what I do with homophobes. I'm fascinated by, ask anyone who knows me. I love a homophobe. Because I just want to sit down with him and go, what made you think this? And then surely it unravels because it's not the truth. Hmm. But only by listening and understanding can we move forward. And so saying, you know, this doesn't seem right to me. This bill, this proposal, or even this meme that you just posted, instead of saying, you're this, you're that, you're bad, as A Course in Miracles would say, you're teaching the other person that they are not who you would want to be. And that is a sin.
Yep.
So if you instead reach across and say, I don't understand.
Get curious. Yep.
Get curious. So really, the healing balm or salve, to use that word. Oh, I like the feeling of those words.
Isn't
balm,
it good?
Salve. Yeah. No, the real balm or salve for America and for the world is not this acquisition of power that we're seeing in various different tribal groups. It's understanding.
Yeah.
It's reaching across and saying, why are you like this? I genuinely want to know. How did you come to think this? I genuinely want to know. And who knows? I, the righteous one, may learn something.
And may have a shift in perspective. Or
yeah, I may have a shift in perspective.
They may
too.
Just from trying to explain why, instead of just, because so many of us have just been programmed from when we were younger. We don't even know why we believe what we believe until we question it. And then we can see that perhaps what we've thought was our truth truly wasn't or isn't.
Yes.
It was someone else's and it was just placed into us and we've been believing it up until now. But if it's not serving you in any way, I mean, there's so
Did
many-
Did this happen for you?
Yeah. Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for you.
Absolutely. So much. You know, a lot of the self-doubt and the even the self-beat up and self-judgment came from programming. You know, a lot of us, and I've seen this, is just, I'm Asian, and it's kind of cultural where they're just really tough on you. And excellence is a high value, but to what extreme, right? And there is no point to reach. So there's always a not enough. Like, there's still more. And I see that was something I had deeply struggled with. And I had even imposed upon other people. I judged them for it. And then I had to unravel it and go, where did I even decide this? Where did this come from? Is this really true? Because I was hurting myself a lot with it and even hurting others, I'm sure, with my judgment.
Wow.
Sometimes saying it outright and other times even just in my mind, the energy of the judgment hurts me. So I had to really dive in deep and release a lot of that. And even the way that I treated myself, you know, I had friends who pointed it out. One of my best friends, she goes, Kwangi, you're such a tiger mom to yourself.
I am downloading right now so hardcore. And I was just thinking tiger mom.
Yeah.
Well, you were raised by Asian parents.
Yeah. And who were immigrants. And I see how my grandparents were, went down the chain through the lineage. And I chose in this time to break that. And it's still a process.
Good for you.
Right?
Because Well, it's of course it's still a process.
Yeah. But
Don't trust anyone who says that they're not still in process.
Exactly. I figured it all out. I'm the enlightened one
now.
No. And I still catch myself in those moments of it. And even yesterday I was working with my coach and a trauma came out when I was two that I always spoke about the moment as a matter of fact. And yesterday bawled my eyes out for my two-year-old. Yeah, for what she went through in that moment, which, of course, see, I'm even getting emotional. I'm still tender about it. But if I don't perform, I'll be abandoned, right? If I don't do well, I'm going to lose love. And there's the high achiever girl. And I realized that's also what caused the burnout, going back to what we talked about in the very beginning of the conversation. The mm-hmm. girl who thought, I have to do everything by myself. I'm going to make this happen. Push, 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 drive, drive, drive constantly. And now what I really love and am committed to is a whole bunch of grace and ease. Like, how can it be easier?
Well, you know what? The interesting paradox, and this was discovered by the Asian Amy Chua, the mm-hmm. professor who I think wrote Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom, mm-hmm. and then went on with her white husband, both of them professors at, I think, Princeton, went on to write a book about successful people, like 7 attributes of success. Guess what one of the attributes across the board of success is? Inadequacy. Ugh. A sense of inadequacy actually, paradoxically, leads people to success because they're pushing. They're mm-hmm. pushing to prove not just the goodness of their work, but they're pushing to prove themselves.
Absolutely. But here's the thing is, here's the other flip side of it now, right? Yeah, you push yourself to succeed, to get that, to prove you're enough. But number one, what is your definition of success? I think most people don't
exactly.
even measure that. And they think that it's this achievement of material or title or something versus what I think true success is
yeah.
feeling happy and enjoying life. And then for those who are driving to achieve success, to prove something because of their insecurities, those are also the ones that the moment they attain the thing that they're striving for are not happy even when they get it, because those are also, right? So it's like this backwards.
it's a paradox.
Yeah.
It's a paradox a bit, but It's kind of like every famous person will tell you, fame isn't what it's cracked up to be, mm-hmm. and that's what they say. And yet still, you want to be famous.
Yeah.
You hear that, but you still don't believe it. And then what happens is that you get there and you go, oh yeah, it's not what it's cracked up to be. Same thing with money.
Yep.
And we hear these stories from people who are billionaires, from people who are mega stars. They say, it's not the fame. It's not the money. And we don't believe them. We don't believe them. Mm-hmm. We don't believe them. And it's true. So for me, like a measure of success that really has crystallized over the past few years is my intimacy with people in my life.
Yep.
The fact that I can argue with my brother and have a passionate argument about politics or something. And then afterwards he'll say, I respect you so much and I love you. And he gives me a big hug. And the fact that I can have my friend FaceTime me and and laugh for 20 minutes and then have a friend say, hey, can I come sleep over? And then cry on the couch about something. Like, that is success. That means you've done life. So yeah, do you need to pay your rent? Yes. Do you need to make money to support your family and to raise children? Yes. But when it comes to real success, I think when it's over and we're put into the box in the ground, the only thing that we keep is love. And everything else goes away.
Yeah. It's so true. I mean, and I hope for people who are listening, and even for me, because again, it's breaking that conditioning. It's like we hear these things, we're like, oh, totally. Yeah, it's about the experience. And then we watch our behaviors and we're still
not reflect that.
No. Yeah. And it's like, okay, actually, instead of just like hearing it, actually know it. And that is the requirement of the embodiment of this truth for yourself. And again, it's a process, you know. So many times I'm like, oh yeah, no, I know what success means to me. It's this new definition that is the truth, that is about love. Like, same thing for you, intimacy. My relationships are so important to me and I put a lot of energy to cultivate them. But then I see myself striving for the very things that won't totally make me happy, but it's the healing of that part of myself that feels it. If I don't perform and achieve, then I will lose love or be abandoned.
But I do have to say something to you, mm-hmm. is that, you know, in your emails to me to set up this podcast, they were the most well-organized, thorough emails about a pod, and I do tons of podcast interviews, your emails were the most well-organized and thorough.
Thank
and
you.
Comprehensive and well-written with no errors. And there's something to be said about that. So even, you know, when just to touch upon self-forgiveness again, mm-hmm. maybe your soul chose to come here and to have this experience and to push yourself a bit, maybe. And maybe the drive for excellence isn't entirely bad. And this is, of course, up to you.
Yeah.
But I'm, and this is your own process and your own healing.
Yeah.
But perhaps there's a reason that your excellence led me to think to myself, wow, these are the most well-organized, thorough emails to prep me that I've ever received.
Excellent.
And that's notable.
Thank you.
Just like someone, you know, people, I had a client once who said, I really want to be famous. And I'm ashamed of about it. And you're the only person who I'm telling. And I said, but you know what Oprah wrote on a little survey that she was given in high school? The question, one of the questions was, where will you be in 20 years? And she said, famous. Mm. Lady Gaga always wanted to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
And the good that Oprah and Lady Gaga have done, the talent that they've shared with the world would not be here if they had not had this supposedly, to some people, shameful drive for fame. Mm. And so it goes with money and excellence.
Totally.
The question, though, always becomes, am I using what I have to serve the world?
Yeah. I love that so much. It's what's coming up for me when you share that, it's the energy behind the thing, right? So even my strive for excellence, as you so beautifully pointed out, it's a good thing for sure, but what's the energy behind the strive for excellence? Is it to try to prove myself? Or mm-hmm. is it because I actually want to grow and just be the best version of myself and continue to see how I can show up even more powerfully and in that level of excellence, right? Same thing I would say for fame. These people who want to be famous, fortunately, Oprah and Lady Gaga have used it for the good, versus there are some people who use it with a different energy behind it, right? A different mm-hmm. intention. So I think there is a good, all this stuff, it's all about the energy behind what it is that you're creating. Are you really using it for the good? Is it really coming from a good place? Or is it to prove yourself or get ahead or to, you know, push people? What is it for? And that's something that I like to check in about is like, what's my intention for doing this? Or what's my intention for being this? Is mm-hmm. it really have, and I love just using the love and fear because I know it's so aligned with the Course in Miracles and mm-hmm. what you teach. Is it coming from love or is it coming from fear?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so simple. And that's one of the ways, you know, it's not easy.
No.
but it's simple.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. You know, when someone says, well, easy for you to say, well, yeah, it is easy because I'm not in it.
Yeah.
So it is easy for me to say thank you for acknowledging that because I'm not in it and my emotions aren't in it, but it is simple.
Mm-hmm.
It is simple. And just that simple reframing of asking yourself, I mean, this is life-changing stuff. This isn't just new age psychobabble. This is, you know, simply asking yourself before you sit down to write that blog or to share that post on social media, asking yourself, where is this coming from? Is it coming from my desire to uplift and elevate and encourage and reassure people? Or is it coming from a need to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, or keep
or
up with
validation.
The Kardashians?
Yeah.
Yeah, or to get validation. And it's fine to do that. I mean, if you take a really great selfie, go post it.
Yes.
Go post it. Like, I have some selfies there where I'm like, wait, is that how I look? I look fucking good.
Yeah. I've seen your IG.
What?
I've seen your IG. Boy, you look good in your IG.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm going to post this because I feel good. You know, so it's not about being this like moralistic, sacrificial, you know, I think of the nuns in the Middle Ages who would whip themselves every day. Self-flagellate mm-hmm. to prove their love for God. No, that's over. We tried that. It didn't work. That's not how you get union with God or with the universe. You do it by tuning in, just like you said, with your intention. Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Do I want to elevate, or am I doing this out of a need? A need.
Yep.
A need for
that feels missing.
To fill me up, because nothing ever will.
Yeah. Jordan, from a spiritual place perspective, which is where you always come from, how do we heal depression?
Depression.
Or anxiety.
You know, my friend Marianne Williamson wrote a beautiful book called From Tears to Triumph. And it is about the journey from despair and depression to light. One of the points that she makes that I agree with, if only because of my research and lived experience, that pharmaceuticals are dangerous, can be dangerous. I'll say that again. Pharmaceuticals can be dangerous for some people. They're life-changing. I know someone whose life was drastically improved by antidepressants. I also know of a woman who fell from the sky when I was walking down the street in New York City, having leapt from her eighth-story apartment building because she stopped taking her antidepressants without tapering 3 days prior. And I got familiar with her family afterwards and heard her story. And so that for me was a sign. I mean, that doesn't happen to regular people every day, that people land 5 feet in front of you from a fall. That was a sign. Wow. And as I do with everything in life, I said, what is this here to teach me? What is this here to teach me? Nothing is coincidence. There is only divine order. So what is this here to teach me? And as I started to learn about antidepressants and psychopharmacology, I learned how very dangerous these antidepressants are, and how in many cases they lead to suicide. And then people say, well, they were depressed. Well, it was actually a pharmacological reaction that was going on. There was a pharmacological intervention, and the person became even more unwell. So I'll say that firstly, because the overprescription of pharmaceuticals cannot be overstated.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll say that, you know, sometimes anxiety and depression are not to be pathologized. I can't think of an American who's tapped in today who shouldn't be, you know, tapped into the news and tapped into what's going on, who wouldn't be feeling some level of anxiety or depression or despair on some level. You know, there's a New Yorker cartoon where the doctor says, I know what your diagnosis is. And the patient says, what? And the doctor says, you're paying attention. There are things in life that are naturally anxiety-inducing. Deaths, breakups, change. So one of my favorite Louise Hay affirmations is, I am safe. It is just change.
Mm.
So whenever something's happening, whether it's the dissolution of a relationship or a company or whatever, you can tell yourself that affirmation, place your hands on your heart, close your eyes, take a deep breath and say, I'm safe. It's just change.
Yeah.
So some of these things, you know, you go through a breakup or you're going through, gosh, I mean, middle school. Who wants to go through middle school?
Nobody.
It's horrible.
It is.
It's horrible. So, but at the same time, if a kid comes home and says, I'm depressed, and the parent says, okay, here's some whatever, you know, drug, and then they get more and more unwell.
Mm.
That's a fear. That's a reasonable fear of mine, at least for, you know, when I'm raising my children, that life is sometimes hard and has anxiety and depression, and it's not pathological.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not some problem with your wiring. Maybe it's life.
Yeah.
And when you realize that, then the anxiety about the anxiety or the depression about the depression begins to fall away a bit of its own weight.
Yeah.
And that, but I would suggest that anyone who feels that they are genuinely depressed and wants a change in their life, to look up my friend and colleague, Dr. Kelly Brogan, B-R-O-G-A-N. She has a wonderful, she's a Cornell educated psychiatrist, and she has a wonderful program for tapering antidepressants and benzodiazepines and also a diet plan that can get your brain and your mind and your soul working in concert with one another.
Yeah.
So I would recommend Dr. Kelly Brogan for someone who feels seriously depressed, as well as checking out Marianne Williamson's book, Tears to Triumph.
Beautiful. You know, something that you said about who wants to be in middle school.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then also knowing that you talk a lot about authenticity in the work that you do and really owning that. And I know, you know, on your website too, you share that you have been openly gay since you were 12.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you to come out and own who you truly are with your sexuality? And at that time when you're in middle school, essentially, when maybe it might not have been, you know, something to be accepted, but something to be judged.
Yeah. I was very lucky. And I think this is a snapshot of the future generation of queer people. In that my parents, I had my gay uncles, quote unquote, my gunkles, in the house all the time growing up. Mm-hmm. Woody and John have been married now for over 30 years. I saw Woody and John hugging and kissing, my gunkles, hugging and kissing as I was bouncing off of the walls. And so it normalized for me being gay. And my parents would say, if you're gay, you're gay. So I was free then to explore the deeper parts of myself. I wasn't concerned. I wasn't worried. I didn't have to spend the time unlearning the fearful thoughts of the world, which would tell me that being gay is wrong. And when I discovered, you know, my spirituality, and I started to align with my spirituality and tune into the truth, and my spirituality is more important than even my parents. My spirituality is more important than my dearest loved ones. My spirituality is how I connect with myself and then interface with my loved ones. So when I started to integrate my spirituality and realize I'm a child of God, God put me here. God made me the way I am. He gave me this eye color. He gave me this sexuality. I'm here because He put me here. And now I need to stop lying to myself and giving myself excuses, holding myself back. For example, oh, I'm gay, so I'm embarrassed, or I can't do this, or I'm shy about this. It's a way that each of us makes excuses to not be the people who God sent us here to be. And when your faith increases and you start really communicating with God, knowing that He's not only in a church or in a mosque or at a temple, but He's as close as your next breath. And you start asking for signs and then trusting the guidance that you receive. Then everything changes. The excuses change. So when I hear the word faith, what I think is the word trust. You cannot have faith without trust.
Yeah.
And the process to getting there is really opening up. Just opening up. Anyone who's listening, you can ask for a sign. If you're in a troubling situation, you're in a relationship, or you don't know what to do with your career, whatever it is, honestly ask for guidance. And the way that I find is most thorough is writing it down and literally saying, dear universe, or dear God, or higher power, whatever you want to call it, dear light, dear love, I don't know what to do in this situation. I'm stuck. Please show me what to do. And then I promise to use whatever I'm given for love. I promise to use whatever love I'm given in a relationship, whatever money I'm given from a job, I promise to use it for love. And when you make that commitment and you ask for guidance, your angels swoop in to give you guidance. Mm. So the petition for guidance or any prayer is heard. Heaven hears every single whisper. The point is, hopefully the prayer is deep enough so that your perspective stays open to perceive the guidance when it's given to you. I had a client once who was like, I don't know what to do. I said, write your letter to God. I don't know what to do in my relationship. I said, write your letter to God. And her boyfriend then, you know, says the one thing to her that she promised herself no man could ever say to her, and she would stay. And the next night, she's sleeping in his bed.
No way! Oh, so good.
So when you ask for the guidance, get ready.
Get ready.
It may not be the easiest guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to pack up and leave. It may not be the easiest guidance, but you can trust. And over time, turns out, when you start to follow that guidance, you look back. Hindsight's 20/20. You look back and you go, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the exact right thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now I can trust in this guidance that I'm receiving. You do that 5 times, 10 times, ask for guidance, and then take the guidance seriously. Then you stop. This God thing doesn't stay fake. It's not like some idea. It's actually working with you and for mm-hmm. you at all times.
Yeah. And the more that you see that it works for you, the more you continue to trust it. And then the more the faith builds. Yeah.
Oh, your intuition just skyrockets.
Completely.
And that's the thing about intuition. Like when you receive a sign and then act on it and trust the guidance, then your intuition starts to get superpowered.
Yes.
It's almost as if, the way I think of it, it's as if whatever forces are at work, whatever divine forces are at work in the universe, can see that you are taking guidance. And then so it starts to send you more guidance.
Yeah.
But if you just sit around and get these signs and this guidance and then do nothing about it, then it doesn't work.
This is so good, Jordan. I'm like, oh, I've got more questions, but we got to close this out. And I think that was such a powerful place to end this on, is really asking for the guidance, trusting in it, building your intuition, and letting that lead you. Because, and I'm just going to share what's coming up for me. Like with the whole anxiety and depression piece, I feel that what you just shared in the end right now could be a potential salve to alleviate some of the unnecessary anxiety and depression that we can create within our soul when we know that we're not alone, that we can lean on a higher power, that we can trust in ourselves also, and know that we're all okay.
That's it. I mean, that's self-esteem. Self-esteem is being able to trust yourself.
Yeah.
And every time that you, and here's the thing though, and I'll close out on this because I know we got to wrap up, but this just came to me so clearly. A Course in Miracles says, fear is a sign that you are relying on your own strength.
Mm.
So if you ask yourself, you know, where am I experiencing fear in my life, in my job, in my relationship, just in my personal life with myself, those are places where I'm relying on my own strength to figure it out. And that's why when you introduce a relationship of a higher power of your own understanding, you can lean on that. And when you're in a really troubling situation or you're just feeling generally depressed, you can say, I trust my higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I trust my higher power. Fear will dissipate. And when you start listening to that guidance that you're receiving from that still small voice within, or from big signs in your life, like the guy saying the thing that you told yourself no one could ever say to you, and you start paying attention to that guidance and that intuition, what happens is you start to rely more and more on your higher power and less on your ego mind. So this is all of what we've been talking about today is all intertwined. And it's about this crazy journey of life where many of us are going to feel anxious and depressed at some point. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something horribly pathologically wrong with you. It could mean that you're living life and you're doing the best you can. And so if you can, at the end of the day, put your hands on your heart and saying, I'm doing the best that I can. I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Even though I'm not perfect, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. If you extend yourself that little bit of grace, your life changes. It's almost like a hole in the clouds opens up and sun starts shining through. But it starts with each of us. And if we can do that with ourselves, then the entire world changes because our relationships, our politics, our sex, everything changes along with it.
Jordan, preach.
There you go. Won't there he do you.
Oh, I could. We could go on all day. This is so good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You've dropped so many powerful wisdom bombs up in this episode. Okay. And thank you for sharing your heart. And I have a few more questions for you.
Yeah.
To close this out, these are questions I ask every single guest. And the first is this: what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
It doesn't seem this way, I don't think, online, but I love humor and I like laughing about pathetic situations in life. I like laughing a lot. I know I come across online as being super earnest and sometimes droll, but I'm actually with my humor, a little effervescent, you could say.
I love it. I can sense that, especially in our conversations. Every now and then, yeah, when I see your IG, I'm like, wow, he's got that earnestness. But then there was one that you did, I think, where you were in the bathroom.
With my friend.
Yep. And yeah. I was like, there he is.
Well, that's my friend who I was just talking about. All we do is laugh and make jokes. And so that was a little snapshot. But so people loved that. That was like one of my most popular posts. Yep. Me and Patrick McGrath laughing in the bathroom.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That's me.
That's that effervescence. When you're in a dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
Cold showers. 100%. I mean, I take a cold shower or a cold bath every single day. I've yet to shower today, though. So. I don't know if your listeners can smell me from over here.
Oh, but. I was wondering what that stank was when we started recording. I was like, what is
no,
that?
But cold shower or bath every day really changes my energy. Throughout the day, we can pick up energies from different people, from our psychological impressions of what someone said or what we saw on TV, which is a good reason not to watch television an hour before bed because you'll bring it into your dream life, which I'm sure people who are listening will know exactly what you're talking about. If you see something crazy on the news, then you dream about it. Mm-hmm. Same goes throughout the day that you pick up energies, and a cold shower spins the energy off of you so you can start fresh. Yes. In mystical Judaism or the Kabbalah, you wash your hands first thing in the morning. And you do that to dispel the energy that you've picked up from your subconscious during your dreams. So I take a cold shower for the same reason, to shake off any energy that I've picked up either during the night or from the past day.
Yeah. Okay. And then knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Trust my dreams and trust my imagination.
Mm. So good.
And to try. That is so true. I mean, to trust my dreams and trust my imagination. One of the most important things you can do for a child is give them the self-esteem, like we just spoke about, mm-hmm. to trust their imagination and to trust their intuition. So all along, again, hindsight's 2020. All along, I knew I was meant to be doing what I'm doing today. because I wanted to be an actor. So I was learning how to speak properly and taking speech class and voice class and learning what it's like to stand on a stage. But I also was a mystical little boy who did naked seances when I was 10 years old, surrounded by candles in my bedroom. And you should have seen amazing. My mom's face when she knocked on when she forgot to knock and walked in on me naked doing a seance with, surrounded by candles. You know, so at this, so it's all happening, and the signs are always there. The guidance is always there. And it's that we don't trust the guidance. We don't trust our imaginations or our intuition. We doubt. And I would tell my 10-year-old self, keep going. Keep doing those naked seances. Keep going to the crystal shop. Keep speaking. Keep talking. You can trust it. You're not weird. That's what I would tell my 10-year-old self. Oh, how's
I
that?
Love that. That is so good. It is so good. And I just had a visual and your mom's like, that's where all my candles went.
Right.
No,
what happened to my tea light?
Jordan, what's going on? Oh, I love that so much. And Jordan, where can people connect with you?
Go to my website, thebachbook.com, and sign up for my newsletters. I don't send them out as much as I should. But when I do, I put a lot of thought into it, and I hope it elevates people and gives them a sense of reassurance and hope. One thing I can do, even if I'm not the best at what I do, hope could be my middle name.
You're a hope dealer.
I'm a hope dealer. I'm a hope dealer. And I just love the idea of giving people a new lease and some more hope. And I think that's what the world needs now is hope and reassurance, less panic, more reason. But with hope and reason, I think we can get ourselves out of many difficult situations, both personally and politically.
Beautiful.
Which is why, I must say, which is why I have my vote for 2020 election thrown behind my friend Marianne Williamson.
That's right.
Who is the most reasonable woman I know. And to say she's fearsomely brilliant is an understatement. She is so smart. I would trust her in a room with Vladimir Putin. I would trust her in any boardroom. And the fact that all of her ideas are her deeply reasonable ideas and articulate ideas, the fact that they're buttressed by this underlying foundation of hope and love is a real game changer. And I think that it only a candidate who is as charismatic and articulate as her or maybe there's someone else, but not that I know of. Only she can go at Goliath.
Yep. I'm with you, my friend.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, Jordan, thank you so much again. This was such an incredible conversation and so much, again, wisdom, love, and some effervescence spilled in there too, which I loved. but I appreciate you so very much. And thank you for being you.
You're so very welcome. It was an honor to be here.
I could seriously listen to Jordan all day long. I love his wisdom and I'm so inspired by how he puts his spirituality above everything else. You know, this is something I've been cultivating for a bit. And well, after my conversation with Jordan, I am going to step it up with my devotion to connect with God and to myself so that I can continue being the best me for everyone around me. And I highly recommend that for you too. You know, I also loved how Jordan shared how his spirituality and self-love is how he connects with himself and then interfaces with his loved ones. You know, knowing yourself and loving who you discover in the process is the key to accessing true peace, happiness, and the ultimate fulfillment in life. And so if you're looking to discover who you truly are and to share yourself open-heartedly and authentically, letting go of all the self-doubt and self-judgments, then you definitely want to check out my Self-Love Transformation online course that shows you a bunch of steps, processes, and daily practices to connect with who you authentically are and to release negative self-talk and beliefs and to replace them with love so that you can come back to your truth. And that is that you are lovable, you are enough, you are capable, and you are so worthy of everything you desire. Now imagine if you operated from that place, what's possible in your life. And my self-love course will get you there. So if you want more details on my Self-Love Transformation online course, you can go to 40dayselflove.com. That's the number 40dayselflove.com. And I'm going to link that up in the show notes for you too. And you can find that over at stephaniekwong.com/EP57. And I'll also have all the links there for you to connect with the amazing Jordan Bach. You definitely want to follow him on the socials so you can get some actionable inspiration and he can flood you with some big love into your soul. All right, so to close this out, if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you got value from this episode, I would be deeply grateful if you just take a quick moment to write a 5-star review on iTunes, because this really supports the show to go up in the rankings so more people can find it, which means we can support even more people to rise higher together. Okay, again, if you want to connect with Jordan or to learn more about my self-love course, you can get all that info in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP57. And feel free to check out all my other podcast episodes there too. All right, guys, until next time, you know that I'm sending you so much love.